Greetings, and welcome to the Leonardo Podcast, number one. I'm Ross Chambliss. We're excited to bring this very first podcast to you from Salt Lake City, where we're hosting Body Worlds 3 and The Story of the Heart, the original exhibition of real human bodies. If you've been to the Body Worlds exhibit, either here in Salt Lake or at another one of its travel locations, or if you're just interested in the science of the human body, this is a great place to hear a whole range of events, lectures, and interviews, and other cool stuff happening at the Leonardo. For our first podcast, I interviewed Dr. Angelina Wally, co-founder of Body Worlds. She was recently in Salt Lake City to oversee installation of the exhibit. She's also wife of Body Worlds creator, Dr. Gunther von Hagens. Dr. Wally has been instrumental with her husband in developing Body Worlds as the world's most successful traveling exhibition. Our interview was recorded on September 19th, 2008. Maybe we can just start off. What are your impressions of Salt Lake City so far?
I must admit, I did not see much of Salt Lake yet because I was so busy setting up the exhibit, but I feel it's a wonderful atmosphere. It's a wonderful scenery. I like that everything is very clean. People are extremely polite and always friendly if you have a question. So I really enjoy being in Salt Lake.
I understand. You've traveled quite a bit around the world and perhaps the U.S. too.
I'm in charge for the exhibit since day onwards. So I traveled indeed quite a bit due to the traveling exhibit. On an average, I travel half a year of a year.
Wow, that's a lot. So I guess I want to start off by saying I understand you were born in Hanover.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were growing up, did you ever imagine that you would get involved with something like plastination or Body Worlds?
No, not at all. I desperately wanted to become a physician when I was already 13, 14 years old. And I studied medicine at Berlin as well as Heidelberg University. And I wanted to become a surgeon. And I thought it would be a good idea to prepare by going to anatomy before, let's say, half a year or a year. I applied at Heidelberg University for a position. And, this was where I met my nowadays husband, Gunther von Hagens, who is the inventor of the technology. And, for these personal reasons, my career drifted quite into a different direction. And I must admit, and that was for particular reasons, I decided to continue working with my husband rather than going to surgery. I did not really like it in the very beginning. I felt, I studied medicine for so long and now I'm here in a plastic lab. And also it happened that I needed to take over the business part around that. Yeah, you know, it took about 5 years and then we came up with this idea of public exhibitions, and ever since, I really love what I'm doing. It's so much rewarding, and nowadays, I would never, ever like to turn the wheel backwards.
I see. Well, I wanted to ask, what was it at first when you first met Dr. von Hagens? What was it about him? I mean, was it love at first sight, or was it anything like that?
Well, not at the first, but perhaps at the second. And we met not really at a romantic place. We met in the dissection class at the anatomy department. Again, I took over the position at Heidelberg University, and one of my obligations was to teach students. But I must admit, at that time, I had forgotten almost everything about anatomy, and I was very happy that my husband, he gave a senior course for senior students to help teaching anatomy during the next course. I attended that, and he was quite, and is until today, of course, quite a unique character, so, yeah.
I see. Well, good. Now, since the exhibit has been ongoing, if I understand, 1995 was the beginning?
That is the first exhibit that started in Japan at that time, in Tokyo, at the National Science Museum.
I see. Since that time, I mean, do you think that most people
that maybe the public in general are more or less accepting the exhibit or the idea of plastination more or better than they did at first?
I think so, yes, indeed. I think from the very beginning onwards, there was a great curiosity in all the environments that we went, whether it was in Asia or Europe, and later on in the United States. And, I mean, it's a traveling exhibition now for more than 13 years now, and, yeah, it is certainly the case that it is more accepted and regarded as normal.
I see. Now, I understand sometimes Dr. Van Hongen's work has, he has faced resistance as far as the public feels that it should be exhibited material. How do you think he's performed, I mean, as far as being able to keep the exhibit going? And
well, one must say, indeed, we touched somehow a taboo in exhibiting human remains in public. It wasn't practiced since the Renaissance, and during that time in the 17th, 18th century in Europe, anatomy flourished, and it was absolutely accepted to do public autopsies, and they were sometimes even conducted in churches, as the human body was seen as a window into God's work. But over the years, anatomy drifted into the universities and were finally hidden in the ivory towers of the universities, so lay people never ever had the chance to see what the real human body looks like. And now we revived this old tradition, and as it wasn't practiced for centuries, people thought this is a really great taboo. And I think Gunther's greatest strength was not to refrain from continuing this work despite the huge controversy we faced basically in Germany.
This sort of work has been going on for a long time, perhaps centuries, and so it's really perhaps not very new, it's just the technique is new, perhaps.
Well, what is different compared to the previous centuries is that we are doing this publicly, that we show it to lay people. That was new, and in fact, the technology used opens up a quite new dimension. Anatomically dissected specimens may not really look as nice when you go into a dissection class, but plastination allows to nicely posture the specimen and put them into a very aesthetic and appealing environment. So that definitely helped a lot.
I see. I'm wondering if you, from your experience, why do you think some people can be uncomfortable with their own physiology, with their own, I don't know, humanness to some degree? Do you ever sense that?
Well, I think the understanding of the body interior and what anatomy is about, that is unfortunately very much determined by the Hollywood industry and the horror movie around it. So in people's mind, anatomy is something very ugly and dirty and smelly and better hidden in the basement. And even if people come sometimes with trepidation and say, well, I can hardly see a droplet of blood when I go and see my doctor, they are positively surprised once they enter the exhibition that everything is so beautifully done and that the specimens look so aesthetically and appealing. And they are often extremely overwhelmed and feel that they have gained indeed quite different perspective of their own body, of their own inner self.
Yeah, yeah. You were saying something yesterday at the press conference downstairs about the first time that you exhibited Body Worlds, I think it was in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and how the positioning of the specimens was much different. Can you tell about that?
Yeah, in the very beginning, and I must say it took really many, many years to develop plastination to what it is today. The very first full body specimens we were only able to do in the early 90s. that is due to the sophisticated equipment and the size of the equipment you need. It's a vacuum process, and you need a vacuum tank that is at least as big as your specimen. And so working in anatomy, it was for us very natural to put the specimen into a posture that is just anatomically straight, looking almost like an anatomical model. And our Japanese visitors, they said, it's really interesting, but it's also a little frightening because they look so dead. And that was the moment we felt immediately reminded by the old Renaissance artists and anatomists. For them, it was absolutely natural to see the body natural. And if you look at these beautiful drawings they left behind, you see they are all in very natural, lifelike poses, and sometimes even put in nice landscapes. And we felt, yes, this is what we have to strive for. We have to make them appealing for lay people, because lay people have never been confronted perhaps with a dead body, and they need to look at something that is appealing and also is relevant to their life. So it's not relevant to their lives looking at a dead-looking body. Hmm.
Certainly, yeah. Well, many of the poses are very moving and very suggestive of a lot of,
dynamic.
Dynamic, yeah, it's a good word. Where have many of the ideas for different postures come from?
Well, at first, I must say, this took quite some time also for us to develop this ability to put life back into a dead body. There's not a certain recipe that we follow. Sometimes we have in the very beginning a certain idea of the anatomical structures that we want to show, and then it is the pose that goes with it that develops while it processes. And sometimes we are more intrigued by a particular pose or by a certain sport, because when you want to make something very vivid, very lifelike, the sports poses are most usable because they are really dramatic. You know, when you have, like here in Salt Lake City, we have what is called, you know, when you run over.
Oh, hurdle?
Yes, we have a hurdle on display, and that, you know, that body is just jumping over this hurdle. And at the same time, he's really looking, his facial expressions are really energetic, that you can really see, well, he really wants to make it. He's just frozen in a movement that makes the specimen really looking dramatic.
Hmm. Yeah, that's... some people might wonder, how long would it take? I think you mentioned this before, but the whole process of so many hours, you said it takes for one specimen.
Indeed, it is really a lot of work necessary to anatomically dissect the specimen. Then it's followed by the plastination process in vacuum. And once it's already impregnated with a silicone rubber, then the specimen needs to be postured. It needs to be put in its overall posture, but we also have to place all anatomical structures in their correct anatomical position. And that is a really very intricate process, and it sometimes takes weeks and months to finalize a whole specimen. And we calculated on an average we spent certainly 1,500 working hours on a single body.
Wow, that's a lot. It's a lot of work. And all of this is done in a laboratory in Germany. Tell me about where that place is. What is it like there?
Well, we have in the meantime different laboratories. Our main institute is located in Heidelberg. That's the Institute for Plastination. But it is nowadays not the largest any longer. We have set up a huge facility in a small town right at the German-Polish border nearby Berlin. That's called Guben. And there we have huge laboratory facilities, and part of that is even public, so people can visit us and see how the plastination process works. And that, if you are interested, you can find out, go online on www.plastinarium.com.
One thing I was reading about, I understand Dr. von Hongens at different times performed some public autopsies. What was the response?
Actually, we did only one public autopsy, and that was at a time when our exhibit was in London. And there was quite an uproar when we came up with this idea, and also authorities had a look at it, whether we would be allowed to do a public autopsy. And it was quite a media hype, one must say. And it was even featured on a UK broadcasting channel. And the reaction was extremely positive. And even afterwards, the UK authorities, they decided to provide lay people with a video of an autopsy, because they learned that people just are interested, and that they have good reason, because the family members often are asked by the physicians in the case of death whether they would agree to an autopsy. And you know, we got letters from people who have witnessed the autopsy, and they said, you know, I'm so happy that I was able to see that, because when my father died, I agreed to have him autopsied, and but I've always felt so guilty, because afterwards I felt that the body might have been chopped up, and you know, he was really relieved seeing that the body after the autopsy was still intact, and how it is done and what you can learn from it. Yeah, that was a great lecture for many people.
Sure, I'm sure many people learn a lot about it, that they perhaps maybe had misconceptions before, and then mm-hmm. they're able to see it themselves and then perhaps change their minds. And I'm also thinking some people would be are very amazed when they hear perhaps, what is the number, almost 8,000 donors?
Yes, we have quite a large body donation program with currently around 8,700 donors, and we even have a U.S. body donation program with currently 820.
If people would be interested in donating, how would they find out about that?
Well, we have comprehensive information on our website, on the bodyworlds.com website. But if you send us a letter, we are also happy to send an information brochure to you.
Okay. Okay. I'm wondering, what is the future of plastination from here? I understand it's constantly being developed, and also as far as even different kinds of animals plastination. Where in what direction is it headed?
Well, of course, we do a lot of scientific work in our laboratories. We constantly develop the plastination technology further, starting with the different polymers. It's a lot of polymer research, also how to better preserve certain organs. It's quite a detailed matter, and I don't really want to bore your listeners. What we are also working on is large animals. We are currently preparing an elephant, and we were lucky to finalize just recently a giraffe.
Wow. So it seems that would be a greater challenge than a human body, perhaps. A larger bodied animal?
Well, it's from a different perspective, it is. I still feel that the human body is just unique and just great to look at, and it's a great treasure. But it is a great challenge for us in the laboratories just to cope with the sheer size of a large animal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's really impressive. That's probably as big as it gets, an elephant. One thing that I also was observing yesterday as the exhibit opened was just how contemplative the exhibit makes people, very introspective.
Absolutely. I personally feel that it is often like in a church, you know, very respectful. People are talking, but on the other hand, they hardly, they're very calm, very with low noise, and very respectful. And even the specimens that are not covered by glass, people really stay away, are respectful, don't touch.
Also, it's sort of interesting because the visitors themselves, you know, from your perspective, you look at the other visitors who are living, and then you can see the plastinated specimen who is not living, and you almost can go back and forth between people around you, and you're almost sort of learning, kind of vicariously understanding anatomy also through the people that you're experiencing it with.
Mm. Well, I think the specimens, they are like a mirror. And I think people realize it's actually me what I'm looking at. And what certainly helps is that we don't publish any personal data with the full body specimens. We are often asked, why don't you at least mention the age or what this person died of? But as soon as it is another individual, it's him or her who died of this or that, then it's no longer you. It's another fake.
Interesting, yeah. Now, you've taken this exhibit to all over the world, and have the reactions ever been different, depending on where the region of the world you take them to? Maybe there's cultural differences about viewing death versus other places, maybe, you know, in Asia perhaps versus the West. How has the reaction been, do you think?
Actually, when I look at the visitors and their reaction, the reaction inside the exhibition, wherever we went, was pretty much the same. But what was really different was a perception by the media. When we started, for instance, in Japan, one should know that Japan is a very consent-driven society. There's not an individual that would stand up and say, I don't find this right to do. But it was a much greater taboo because it was literally forbidden for about 200 years to expose a human corpse in public. So that was really a great taboo. But nevertheless, there was not a single article that I'm aware of that would be somehow critical. But when we came to Europe, and particularly in Germany, it was just the opposite. We had great acceptance among our visitors. But if you look into the media, you have the feeling that just was an uproar and that it was at least 50-50 who were against it and those who were in favor of it. So that is nowadays media way to sell the story. So to sell a controversial story sells always better. But the media or the article that you find on the exhibit, they do not necessarily reflect what visitor believe.
Interesting, I see. Well, just one more question, I guess. Where after this exhibit, where do you see Body Worlds? I understand there's a Body Worlds 4 out, but not 5. Do you see the exhibit progressing any direction?
Well, I constantly develop the exhibition further, but I don't believe in numbers. I believe in quality. So I do hope that we won't have a fifth exhibition because I would hardly know how to deal with that. I would very much like for the future to see a permanent museum on the human body. And I do hope that one day we will generate enough money to make that happen.
Great. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
It was my greatest pleasure. Thank you.
For the Leonardo Podcast, I'm Ross Chambliss.